The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Good afternoon. Welcome to a new week. It's great to have all of you with us here on a Monday afternoon, and we have a lot to get into, especially with what happened over the weekend. So many different spring games, and we will talk about all of them today, beginning with the one in Tuscaloosa where the defending national champs saw Bryce Young take center stage. Bryce Young trying to fill the shoes of Mac Jones, who filled the shoes of Tua, who filled the shoes. Yeah, you know the story. He looked good. For those of you who were able to watch the game, it was low scoring. And afterwards, Nick Saban seemed to be in a good mood.
Probably in a game like today, there's a lot more drop back passes, just by the way you sort of plan the game. You have a minimal number of plays that you're going to run in the game. So probably some of the issues that we have in the offensive line with guys missing, the pocket collapses on them, and he was in some tough situations relative to that. But I think he's done a really good job all spring. We continue to work on, him kind of having a presence out there that affects other people in a positive way. And I think he's starting to get more and more respect from the other players by the way he plays. But every scrimmage we had, he performed very, very well. And I thought he performed well today.
And looking at Saban, what do you get when you mix crimson and white? Pink. Let's move on and talk about somebody who used to wear the Alabama jersey, and that's Kirby Smart. He seemed like he was in a pretty good mood as well. His highly heralded quarterback, JT Daniels, seemed to have command of the offense. Some other players, Adonai Mitchell, looking quite good as well. Kirby Smart overall, ready to take on all comers.
He's got to be able to utilize the pocket, and we work on that each and every day. I know Coach Munkin is always driving that home with him, his ability to move in the pocket, step up. The offensive line's got to protect him and give him an opportunity. There were some times today that there were four-man rushes, and we got some pressure, and guys got pushed back into him. And I think that's important to allow him to step up in the pocket and move around and make plays down the field. But he has command of it. He understands it. The key is his decision-making process. We know the quarterback position, there's probably a decision has to be made every single play, and he manages that really well for us.
Remember Clark Lee? He's the new man at Vanderbilt. Well, but before we get to him, how could I forget? Shame on me. I forgot all about LSU's spring game. And it was an encouraging start. Coach O, feeling good about what is to happen in the future. And last year was a bit of a disappointment after the national championship run. More on LSU and how they stand both on and off the field coming up here in the pro. And now I get to Clark Lee. Come on, I just couldn't wait to talk about Vanderbilt's new head coach. He is scrapping Vanderbilt football's oldest identity. Names on the uniform. Can he build one back? Would you all agree that he has the toughest job of all the SEC coaches, or maybe it's the easiest? He inherited a team that didn't win a conference game. I'll take that job. Sam Pittman's got to figure out a way to do better than he did in his first year, which was really very good. Didn't win as many games as it seemed, but Pittman didn't think things went all that badly. Speaking of Sam Pittman, we are going to see him a little bit later on, so I can't wait to talk to him. So this is some of the notables. You got big stars all over the place. Young K.J. Jefferson from Arkansas. He looked great. Kirkland at LSU. Jamar Chase? I can do that. So a lot to talk about today, to say the least. I don't want to ruin anyone's party. You can take whatever you want out of spring games. You know, sometimes you walk away going, didn't like what I saw. Or you can build it up. It's worth remembering at Alabama, for all you Crimson Tide fans who think the team looked great, there were more than 20 players missing the game. Those 20 will not be missing by the time Miami comes around in early September. So that's where we are. here on a Monday. We want to hear from you at 855-242-7285. Give us a call right now. John Talty's first up. We talk to John in 30 minutes. Brooks Cabina covers LSU from The Advocate. Sam Pittman, head coach. And we are not done with that lineup, even though that's a pretty good one. Kubelik, who did the Georgia game in the final hour, and our trusty man, Field Yates. So let me just pose a few questions to all of you right now. What did you see Saturday, and what did you like? Do you feel better? Do you feel different about your team? Do you feel worse? I talked to a fan. I won't mention the school. I will not mention the school. I ran into a... I'll just describe him as a fan, okay? To say too much else would give it away. And he happened to see his team work out the other day. Well, I just gave it away. It's his team. And he was in the workout, so that should be self-explanatory. And he was in shock. Now, was he in shock because they were so good, or was he in shock because they were so bad? I will not tell, because it's too easy to discern which school I am talking about if I give too much away. But I'm really interested today to get your reaction. The spring games were, whether you went to them, whether you streamed them, whether you watched them over the air, would really like to get some reaction. And that's where we are going to start here today. We will get into some other situations as well. Brooks Cabina talking to us about what he saw on the field from LSU and the off-the-field problems as well. You all know he's been covering that. With a team of reporters in Baton Rouge. Look forward to talking to Coach Pittman. Really want to hear from Cole about the JT Daniels and also the defensive line. Cole seems to think that Georgia is in extraordinarily strong position on both sides of the ball. So that's where we are. We'll throw the phone lines open at 855-242-7285. Look down. There's lines available right now. Come grab them. We are here for the next 4 hours.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. Call Feinbaum now. 855-242-7285. That's 855-242-PAUL. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show.
Man, we have a lot more to do this weekend. South Carolina, A&M, Tennessee, and Ole Miss. All having spring games, and you can stream them all live at SEC Network Plus. And we welcome you back, and we are going to get to your phone calls in a moment, but this is we have something we want to share with you. Andy Staples, everybody knows Andy, he asked a question, and we are going to piggyback off of it today. It's a derivative from the European soccer about forming a super league. So they are thinking about doing it, or maybe they are doing it, and how would you do it, or exactly who would you put in that league if you were doing it here? Andy has some answers for us that we will share with you momentarily. And here it is. Alabama, Auburn, Clemson, Florida, Georgia, LSU. I think you know where all they live. Michigan, Nebraska, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Oregon, Penn State, Texas, and Southern Cal. That would essentially be a super league. How interesting. I'm trying to think, who is missing? I'm not even sure Michigan should be in there, but that's just a thought. But I wonder who do you think is missing from that? Nebraska is no longer in there, but why shouldn't Nebraska be in there? What have they done in the last 20 some odd years? Is Miami in there? Interesting thinking that Miami and Nebraska were, Florida State's not in there. Some of the teams, the more interesting who isn't in there. Tennessee's not in there, but I think we know why. Let's get back to the calls at 855-242-7285. And William is up next. Hey, William.
What's up, man?
Hello. William, what's on your mind?
Me.
William, I tell you what, we are not hearing anything that you said, so we're going to need to call you back. Have you call back? Anthony is calling. Hey, Anthony.
How you doing? I just wanted to know how you think Ohio State stacks up against teams such as Alabama this year, considering our quarterback situation.
I think Ohio State stacks up rather poorly against Alabama right now.
Why is that?
Well, you already gave it. I mean, we think we know who the quarterback is, but we do know who the quarterback is at Alabama. I think Alabama is, I mean, the last time they played, there was a 28-point differential, and I don't think much would have changed. But by the way, you know the great part about your question or the flaw in your question? We have about 9 months before we really have to worry about it, and I'm not overly concerned about it right now. I'm not sure why you are either. Christian is up next in Alabama. Hello, Christian.
Hello.
Hello.
So do you think Paul Tyson is going to transfer from Alabama?
I'm not sure why he would transfer. He right now he's the backup quarterback. Listen, Bryce Young is going to be the starter. We know that. We knew that going in. The question, who's going to be the backup? That's what we're talking about. But
I know that, Paul, but he's Bear Bryant's great-grandson, and he's the redshirt sophomore right now.
Well, first of all, Christian, he is Bear Bryant's great-grandson, as you said. Why does that matter?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
I'm not saying it does, but I'm just saying he's Bear Bryant's great-grandson, and Bear Bryant, Florida State, came there, was the greatest coach in Alabama history.
Well, that is debatable, Christian, but the bottom line is this. It doesn't matter whether he's Bear Bryant's great-grandson, Gene Stallings' great-grandson, or Wallace Wade's great-grandson. He's a football player on the University of Alabama roster, and that's all that matters to Nick Saban, and that's all that matters to Bill O'Brien. And I'm not being disrespectful. I've been one of the biggest Paul Tyson fans around since he was in high school. Anyone who watches or listens to the show knows, but you know, he will be judged on his merit. From what I've heard, the coaches thought he played a pretty good game. That may not have been as obvious if you were watching the television broadcast, but I can tell you he graded out very well, and you know he will compete for the backup job. That's what I know at this hour. Hey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let me try Terry here. Terry, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, I guess you're setting the bar pretty low. I can probably do a better job calling. I would say Georgia has some issues, but it looks like the quarterback room looks a lot stronger than in recent years. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would. But, you know, again, I mean, I've already violated one of my axioms, is to try not to make too much out of the spring game, but I don't think when it comes to who the starting quarterback at Georgia is, that's an issue. It's just really, you know, what else do they have? I mean, what did you see Saturday?
They've got some issues along the offensive line and, of course, on the back end of the defense, but maybe they can figure those things out. But my question is, of the pool of contenders in the West, who do you think can really make a difference this year? Do you think it would be like Ole Miss or LSU or a surprise team like Auburn? Or who do you think can
Right now, I would say LSU and Texas A&M are the two schools I would be the most concerned about.
Well, I'll keep an eye on that. And again, it's great we're talking about football, but, you know, maybe we won't have to wait too long. What, 4 months?
Well, you know what? We don't have that long to go at all. We are literally 3 months from media days. Sounds pretty exciting considering we didn't have media days last year. And we're about 4.5 months away from the beginning of the season. So season's a little later this year. Well, not compared to last year, but compared to the year before. Last year, the season didn't start till September 26th. But I looked at the schedule today for the first time. There are only a handful of games on the final Saturday in August. Most of the schools begin on the next weekend. Now, that could change. I mean, you could see some Thursday night games pop up a little earlier, and maybe somebody could start the season a little bit earlier, but I don't think so right now. Let's grab some more calls and talk to Matthew, who is in Alabama. Hello, Matthew.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Doing great.
Hey, I wanted to hear what you thought about Jay Barker's son. Other than that interception Saturday, it seemed like he played pretty good. I want to hear what you thought about that.
I'm not sure I really got – I'm not sure I got a good enough sample of it. I know he's a really good player, but I can't tell you I know very much about him.
Yeah, it seemed like he's played pretty good. Other than that interception, I think he was right up there with Bryce Young.
Well, if he's anything like his father, that would be good news. Mike is up next. Hey, Mike, go right ahead.
How are you doing today, Paul?
Mike, I'm doing well. Thank
Hello?
You.
Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
All right, thank you, buddy. Hey, I know it's early in the season. We have a lot of players missing. What did you think about that game Saturday? I thought it was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, again, I would have liked to have seen the whole team because based on what I've heard when the whole team was there, and it's pretty obvious that everybody picked up something and couldn't play.
Yes, pretty stacked this year.
I mean, you know, those are the things we dealt with every week last season, and you know, we kind of forgot about it, and here it is again. But hopefully, it will be gone by the upcoming season. I think Alabama is going to start out number one and one in the country. I think they are good enough to win it again.
I do too. But the main reason I called, I don't want to bore all you listeners, but why do you think — I used to love me some NASCAR. Why do you think NASCAR is so boring to watch these days? I mean, I used to — my Sundays was always NASCAR. And now
Mike,
you can't even hardly watch it. I just can't put a head on what's wrong.
Well, there are a lot of reasons. I covered NASCAR for a long time early in my career. And they have they've taken all the fun out of it.
They have. You can't even watch a whole race.
When I covered NASCAR — now, again, this is a million years ago — I mean, I remember being at a luncheon one time, and I went up to — I can't remember what the feud was — Darrell Walter, Bobby Allison, Rich. I mean, it didn't matter. You could walk up to a NASCAR guy before the race, in the pits during qualifying, and you could almost get a brawl developing just by — because, I mean, they were like wrestlers. I mean, they knew they had to sell the sport.
Mentioned one other name, and they got mad.
Yeah, and, I mean, it was hilarious, and I had a blast with it. I mean, I covered Daytona, Talladega, other races. And then, unfortunately, you started seeing a lot of issues develop. And, you know, you saw Bobby Allison's wreck 30 years ago, and then obviously Dale Earnhardt. And they put so many – I'm not saying this is wrong, because you had to do it. But they put so many safety procedures in. And then you started getting NASCAR drivers from Indiana, California, And you lost that.
And all the cars are the same.
Yeah, you know, one guy, you have about, I don't follow it that closely, but I don't live that far from some NASCAR drivers, so I keep up with it a little bit. And you have about three or four entities that own all the cars.
Correct. I think that's the big problem, Paul. I think you got four super teams, and then you've got all these cars that don't have a chance.
No, it's too bad.
So you're looking at the same guys every week, and you don't have the bad boys no more, no. Other than Kyle Busch, maybe.
Well, yeah, but yeah, and I agree with you. There was an element to it that was really that was just dramatic, and you know, I mean, the sport had to change. I will say that objectively. It needed to make a leap from where it was, but now it's just like everything else on TV, and you don't I think in some ways the handoff from Dale Earnhardt to Jeff Gordon to Jimmy Johnson is really what I mean. Let's be honest, Jimmy Johnson's one of the greatest drivers in the history of the sport. And he's one of the nicest people, but he's boring. I mean, at least Jeff Gordon was a bad guy. I mean, you wanted to hate Jeff Gordon until he got older, and then people started cheering for him. But I mean, if you said, listen, you have to do a NASCAR story every week and try to make these guys interesting, it's impossible. Hey, quick break. More to come. John Talty around the corner. We are taking your calls at 855-242-7285. We have just buckled in, and we hope you'll stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. It is great to have all of you here, and certainly a lot of spring games to try to decipher. What do they really mean? We think we know what they mean, but John Talty joining us with the 38,000-foot view of everything. John, great to have you back. Hope all is well. Good afternoon.
Appreciate you having me on, Paul. Hope all is well with you as well.
It's good. It really is. Things are going great. And let me start with Alabama. I realize people watch a spring game and come up with some fascinating questions. Your snapshot judgment when it was all over.
Yeah, I mean, I think what the approach that I try to take, and Paul, I think you're of a similar mindset to me, is that, you know, spring games have really limited value in terms of the big takeaways that you can have from them. I mean, it's fun to have the wild overreactions to spring games. You know, if you watch the Alabama A-Day, you know, you're watching Will Reichard miss these kicks, and, you know, all of a sudden maybe you're feeling these pangs of previous Alabama kicker struggles, but then you take a step back and you realize this guy went 14 for 14 last year, was one of the best kickers in the country, and, you know, it's one spring game. Like, it'll be okay. He's going to be a fine kicker next year. So that's something that I think you always have to kind of caution yourself is, like, let's not go wild with what we saw. I think what we can see, you know, we'll get into it in a second, I'm sure. But, you know, you see the things that certain players do, whether it's Bryce Young, and it might confirm some things in your mind. You might feel a little bit better, a little bit worse. But, you know, if you think a team's good, don't let a spring game change that. If you think a team's bad, don't let them competing against themselves all of a sudden convince you that they're one of the best teams in the SEC.
And the one thing we don't know, and I don't exactly what Nick Saban said about it, but it's pretty obvious if you're an observer, you know, why so many players were absent, and you lose the opportunity to really take a good look at the team, which, you know, from what we saw, they looked really good, but they were missing the guts of some critical members of the defense, some important members of the offense. So I guess that puts us in the same position we're in every spring and summer, expecting Alabama to compete for the national championship. I haven't heard anything from you that would dissuade me from that thought.
No, I mean, I think that's something. I think that they will be one of probably the preseason top two or three teams in the country. You know, I think that we have to remember that they are losing a lot, especially on offense. You know, there's going to be questions, you know, I think throughout the fall and leading into the season when they play some of their tougher games, you know, like, how is Bryce Young perform? I think we're judging off of the spring game and what he's done spring. You know, he's done pretty well. I think, you know, Nick Saban said multiple times they've been happy with what he's done. Now, is that good enough to win a national championship? Well, you know, we've got a lot of time to figure that out. But I think, you know, what we learned during the spring with Alabama, and I think to your point, Paul, we didn't necessarily get to see it during the spring game because so many of their top players were out, but it at least feels like Alabama's going to have a great defense. You know, maybe, you know, probably better off right now than where their offense is. But, you know, the defense last year, there were some ups and some downs. You know, they gave up a lot of points to Ole Miss, gave up a lot of points to Florida. But in the grand scheme of college football, the way the game's changed, actually had a pretty strong defense. And I think it's only going to be improved next year, even though they are losing, you know, some of those veteran guys like Patrick Surtain and Dylan Moses and Christian Barmore and down the line. But I think big picture-wise, nothing that we saw in the spring, I think, should dissuade you from believing that Alabama is again going to be one of the top teams in the country competing for a national championship.
John, what's the takeaway from Auburn?
Well, I mean, I think, I don't know how much of it you watched, Paul, you know, but it wasn't necessarily the most exciting spring game I've ever watched. Not that any of them are really that thrilling, but, you know, I feel like it was, you know, you saw some things here and there. I mean, I think coming into that game, I felt like Tank Bigsby was probably the best, you know, returning running back in the SEC. I think, you know, watching him, not that he got that much work in the spring game, but watching him, you know, break off a big long run for a touchdown, watching him, you know, run back a kickoff, which didn't count, but you could see the speed he has and maneuverability, you know, lends you to believe, all right, this guy's really good, and they should probably find a way to focus more on him in the offense. You know, the guy that everyone's always going to talk about is Bo Nix. You know, I think watching that game, I would say there was nothing necessarily to get you super excited about. There wasn't anything that was, you know, particularly awful that, you know, has you holding your head in your hands, you know, so upset about him. I mean, I think he didn't do that much, didn't really, you know, test downfield. And obviously that was, you know, part of the script they had. So there's going to continue to be questions about Bo Nix. There's going to be, you know, I think the biggest storyline heading into next year is just going to be, you know, how do Brian Harsin, a new offensive coordinator, Mike Bobo, you know, get the most out of Bo Nix. We saw him under center a little bit during the spring game, which was unique. Curious to see how that works for a guy who's been used to, you know, operating under the shotgun. But he's someone who, you know, if they're going to do what, you know, Auburn fans hope that they want to do, you know, he's going to have to take a leap next year. You know, it hasn't happened his first 2 years, but I think maybe more of a focal point on Bigsby should hopefully take some of the pressure off of him and maybe help him, you know, be more of the guy that came in as a five-star, highly pedigreed state champion quarterback.
Let me go off the field with you, John. And we learned a couple weeks ago that the SEC was not going to have its usual spring meetings in Destin, which brings me to the question, because I keep hearing there are so many issues on the table. This transfer rule that passed the other day, the SEC has to figure that out. Just in terms of what you hear, and there's nobody closer in the reporting of the SEC office than you, John. I mean, what are their big ticket items right now between now and media days?
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a big one. I mean, you've seen pretty much, you know, don't take me exactly on this, but most of the big conferences have at this point, you know, gotten away from those policies that prevented, you know, players from transferring within a conference, within the waiver. You know, I think the Big 12 was the most recent one. You know, we've seen this be a big issue in the past. Paul, I'm sure you remember, you know, the Maurice Smith situation, you know, him trying to leave Alabama from Georgia, and that, you know, really playing out mostly publicly and, you know, Nick Saban kind of putting the onus on, hey, these are the SEC rules, and so we're just going to follow the rules. You know, we're not doing anything wrong here. And ultimately, you know, he was able to play at Georgia, but it did require a waiver from the league office. So I think that the way that, you know, the game has changed and really just the public pressure, I think, on it, it would make a lot of sense for the SEC to follow, you know, many of its conference peers and getting rid of that interconference policy with transferring. you know, I think we're going to continue to talk about NOI. You know, we've seen, more and more, I think, states within the ACC footprint start to adopt different things. So that, you know, I think if we were all meeting in Destin, I think that would be one of the biggest points of discussion is just figuring out, you know, is there a way as a conference to get on the same page? You know, if it's just a free-for-all, which I think no one really wants, you know, can Mississippi have different rules than Alabama? You know, those are all things that need to be figured out. And we've seen it to some extent with other things that, you know, sometimes states just get to do what they want. But, you know, something as big topic as that, you, of course, would want to all be on the same page, you know, as a conference. And I think that they're going to have to continue to monitor, you know, what Congress does. I know, you know, Anthony Gonzalez is one of the people who's, you know, planning on presenting a bill in the near future on that. So there's just a lot of these big issues that are being discussed that need to be figured out. And I think ultimately, you know, the big takeaway is just a lot of it's related to players, you know, player freedom, player compensation. I think that's going to be the big talking point for all of the, you know, these big SEC leaders, whether it be Greg Sankey to ADs, the coaches. You know, that's what I think will be the big, you know, point of conversation this summer.
John, a year ago, we all know what the topic was. And you know, if you watch this weekend, you saw half the stadium filled at Alabama. You've seen big crowds elsewhere. If you watch baseball in places that you used to live in Mississippi, even in Knoxville over the weekend. And I don't say this making a political statement, but it looks like in a lot of these places, COVID is over. What I mean by that is, or what I'm getting to is, what does fall look like? Is everyone on board? Are we going to see stadiums filled to the brims?
Well, first off, I think Vandy coach Tim Corbin agrees with you. So I'm sure he's on board if you're at take there, Paul. But I think that it's certainly trending that way. And I think, you know, especially if we're looking at, we're really zeroing in on the SEC footprint, I think that there's going to be less issues for, you know, these schools and big stadiums to fill out the way that you might see, you know, up north. You know, for instance, there was a story, I think about a week or so ago, that, you know, the county that represents, you know, that includes the Buffalo Bills, you know, they're, you know, bringing forth this thing that you basically have to have a vaccine passport, you know, if you want to attend their games. The controversial thing is something that a lot of people are trying to figure out. I don't see that as likely to be a factor, you know, down south. You know, not to get particularly political here, but I just think the way that, you know, the government leaders that we have down south, to me, based on the trends we've seen to this point, seem, you know, less likely to put up major roadblocks to have, you know, full crowds, you know, this fall. So I think we're all trending that direction. I think the biggest crowds we saw at spring games, I think, is the first sign of that. I think, you know, you're going to continue to see more and more people get the vaccines, which I think will lead to, you know, more confidence at these university levels, you know, to be able to be willing to have these big groups of people. But I think if we just look at the state of Alabama, Paul, you know, there's still a lot of people that are not vaccinated. And, you know, talking to some people recently in the last week or so, you know, there's some concerns about whether Alabama is ever going to get up to even 50% of the state vaccinated. So it'll be curious eventually when push comes to shove and these people have to decide what the amount of people we're going to allow in, you know, whether how much of that is factored based on, you know, the vaccination of possible crowds. And again, whether any of these states or schools in particular, you know, force a vaccine passport or force basically proof that you've been vaccinated in order to attend the game this fall.
Because, Sean, I mean, you work for a big company. I do. I mean, there are so many weird things within the workplace. You can't ask one of your employees if they've been vaccinated. But can you, and I guess, you know, can you ask them? I mean, are you, it's one thing to get on an airplane. It's another thing to go to a football game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It opens up a lot of legal questions. And, you know, I'm just simply not smart enough to know all the answers to them yet.
I think you are.
I don't know if anybody is. I don't know if anybody is quite sure enough. But, I mean, I think if we circle back a year, Paul, and, you know, attending a lot of these games, you basically had to show some sort of proof. Now, it was something that was pretty easily maneuvered around. But you basically had to, you know, show this thing to people to get into stadiums. You know, I haven't been in contact with anyone who's tested positive in the last 10 days.
Right.
You know, I haven't had any symptoms, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, if you had told me that, you know, 2 years ago that you would have to do that in order to get into a football game, that would have blown my mind. So that's already kind of showed that, you know, things are changing. And so some of these things that might have seemed crazy a couple of years ago are already happening now. But, you know, that to me is still the biggest question, is that whether you can actually legally, you know, make someone show proof that they've been vaccinated in order to attend a game? And, you know, there's all these different things that, you know, and if they aren't willing to have a vaccine, do you make them sign a waiver, basically, you know, waiving, say, Auburn University of any possible ramifications if you attend a game of 100,000 people and you end up testing positive, you know, from COVID because of it? So there's a lot of different things that they have to work through, and that's something that, you know, I'm sure, as is how it usually works out, Warriors will probably be the big winners in all this, and that there's probably a lot of them already being consulted about what, you know, these universities can and can't do when it comes to some of these big events.
And that, if I could offer a political opinion, is a tragedy that lawyers continue to get rich. John, thank you. It's great to talk to you. It's great that we're having conversations about fall football games without a lot of teeth gnashing. So much different than it was a year ago when you were on this program literally every day, all week, about what the future looked like.
No, absolutely. And I, Paul, we might have chosen the wrong careers not becoming lawyers, but you know, I think we're doing okay. And it was great to talk to you again, as always.
You got it. See you soon. John Talty, the best, the senior sports editor at AL.com, joining us. And we are heading to a break right now. More of your phone calls right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome you back. And Noel is up next. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, pleasure talking to you again, sir.
Thank you very much.
I was going to comment a little bit about the gentleman that talked about NASCAR earlier, but I wanted to comment first. I thought it was kind of ironic watching the 8A game Saturday with Alabama's Nick Saban out on the field. He was really jumping in their butt. I mean, play after play after play. And even Kirk and Joey said, man, I'm glad I'm not on the other end of that a couple of times. And then at the end of the game, you know, the post-game conference, man, it was nothing but praises and praises. And I just, oh, it's kind of ironic. No,
I only offer this because I've been to practices and I spent the day with Nick Saban once at a kids camp, and he wasn't a whole lot different. And in his world, he's just trying to make them better. He doesn't look at it like we would look at it. And that he's a coach on the field. It doesn't matter whether he's dressed up as the Easter Bunny. He's still coaching at all times.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. But he does have some people skills, I think, that a lot of people could learn from. But I was going to comment on the NASCAR deal as far as NASCAR became woke when, you know, all this woke business now.
Yes.
When Jeff Gordon entered the system. You know, he was this good little, cute little Indiana, California boy, and you got Earnhardt, you know, the brash,
right.
You know, just looks like an old Western, you know, cowboy. And you got corporate involved in it, where everybody had to calm down. We can't have fights, and we can't have this, and we have to be a gentleman and all that. And that's kind of where it all started. And I'll give Jeff Gordon all the credit in the world. He's one of the greatest drivers that ever lived. But he changed NASCAR, I mean, permanently. You know, you're not going to see.
Yeah, and let me ask you, and Dale Jr., even though, you know, he's from there and he still lives there, you know, he was the modernization of the, I mean, he was somewhere in between. And I agree, because I was still covering the sport back when the handoff occurred. And yeah, and another thing, and I know this sounds maybe partial, but remember, you and I both remember, I mean, drivers used to live somewhere other than North Carolina. I mean, they all moved to the same street, and, you know, the Alabama gang was gone, and so were so many other groups that they used to make it interesting.
Yeah, well, they went to Morrisville. They set up all the shops there,
right.
You know, just kind of the new hub. But when I grew up in Greenville, South Carolina, our next-door neighbor owned Greenville Pickens Speedway. So he gave us free tickets every Saturday night to Greenville Pickens races on Saturday night, the dirt track. And all those guys came down on a regular basis. I mean, I can remember playing infield with Dale Jarrett and Dale Earnhardt and Kyle Petty and all of, you know, they would come down and we'd run foot races and have a little one of those metal merry-go-round things, you know. And,
no, you're
– you know, they were just hanging. You know, with their dad on the weekends, you know, and
you're right.
They ride down.
And Dale Earnhardt, he'll tell you.
By the way, no, I have to run here, but it's not the only thing that's changed. Unfortunately, we're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back.